Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
How do you feel? You know, how did you even go to sleep last night? These are very important questions, because guess what? Your conscious mind was definitely at work. Don't you know the conscious mind never sleeps nor does it slumber? There's a part of it called the subconscious, and it doesn't have a space and time. It is forever, ever present. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about how the mind is affected by various things. And it's a battlefield. It's affected by everything you experience in life, from the time you're born, set feet on this earth, up until this very moment. The mind is consciously recording. Your eyes are your video, and your ears is your audio. It is constantly recording every, believe it or not, every stimulus. It takes over 2 million parts of data per second. I know that sounds odd, but it does. It's constantly constantly recording through your sensory organs. So we just want to learn a little more about that and most of all understand how to conquer it. You say, is that such a thing? Can one conquer the mind? I call it self-mastery. Self-mastery. And, you know, I want to kind of pull out a few things that can cause the mind to lose its diameter. Let me say it like that. I don't like to say lose the control. I think it's more so it gets stagnated in certain areas because of the intensity of that feeling that you felt when whatever happened. So let's go into that a little bit. The first part I want to start talking about is our conscious state. Conscious state is eyes wide open, and you are actively alive. Because guess what? When you're sleeping, a lot of people, yeah, you're still breathing, but you're not conscious. You're in a sleep state. So the subconscious mind then takes over. I call it the autopilot. So when you hear me say autopilot, I'm referring to the subconscious mind. So the conscious mind, it is actually supposed to make your conscious decisions in the present moment. However, if you're not making conscious decisions in your present moment, your autopilot will kick in. You know, it's like an immune system. No, we have an autoimmune system, and we have an immunity system. So our creator, our higher power, consciousness, divine consciousness, created us just in case. If we lost one part, we have another part that kicks in. Look at that. However, okay, there's always stipulations. Those stipulations is when a mind has experienced trauma, you know, some type of trauma, mild, moderate, or severe, it gets altered. I'm not talking about the conscious state, but the subconscious state. It gets altered because remember, it is your database. It records everything, just like a part in your brain that records everything. The brain is just like a master computer. That's what it does. It controls the operations of the body. So whatever is going on in the brain will go on in the rest of the body. So we want to take it's so much to it, y'all. Oh, my goodness. I have to start at one particular place. So the first thing I'm going to do, which kind of makes things a little simpler, because by no means am I a brain expert. No, I am a mind expert. A mind expert, which means that I've been studying for, oh my goodness, well over 20 years and just really studying the human mind and the interactions of it, the response and the reaction, which is two different things, all right? Some people think I'm just reacting to a situation, and you probably are if you're impulsive, but when you're responding, you are having conscious thoughts about that before you do it. It's called either being proactive or reactive, okay? So we just want to kind of really dig into these areas. So I have to give a topic, and I'm going to ask my wonderful co-host to give me a topic of just anything dealing with life, and let's see how the mind controls or deals with that. Because remember, the mind is the battlefield.
Yes, it is. And so many people are not realizing that they, because of their thoughts, have created and are creating the reality they experience.
Correct.
We don't realize the power of suggestion. You mentioned the subconscious mind. If you are observing something or listening to something, it is going into your subconscious mind, even if you think you're not paying attention to it. Now, just think about this. This is a common thing that happens all the time. You're minding your own business, and suddenly you hear a song playing. and you're not really paying attention. It might even be coming from somebody else's car. You're driving down the street, and somebody's playing this loud song, and the sound of the words and the lyrics come into your head. And then for the next 2-3 hours, you can't get that song out of your head. Now, you didn't constantly try to listen to it or memorize the lyrics, but they're playing all day. It's like somebody rewinding a tape and playing it over and over and over again, and you can't shut it off.
Oh.
And has that happened to you? Happens all the time. Now, just think if the lyrics to that song were something negative or derogatory, and you still can't shut it off.
Oh.
I mean, I had this experience, and I was so angry at this person because the lyrics were something really foul and disgusting, and I couldn't erase it out of my mind. And I kept thinking, I got to do something to get this song out of my head. Because, I mean, it was a catchy beat. It was playing over and over again in my head. And it wasn't words that I wanted to have playing in my head. So knowing that everything you see and hear is recorded in your subconscious mind and replays in your subconscious mind without your control, unless you make a purposeful intention to replace it with something else, that means you have to guard what you see and hear, what you choose to see and hear, because there's so many things that are going to come into your senses that you didn't choose. So when people send you videos, and some people send you fun videos, and, you know, and you laugh, and that can lift you up, and some send you really awful images, do you really need to see two women fighting and tearing out each other's hair? And the image of that playing in your head, how is that going to affect your mood? Is it going to cause you anger, disgust, anxiousness, fear? What is the impact of what you're allowing yourself to pull up on your cell phone? Because these are devices. I mean, this is like everybody's communication device for programming your subconscious mind. And if you're not aware that this is what you're doing every time you pull up those text messages, emails, and images and all of that on your phone, then you will constantly have a hodgepodge of information that is affecting your moods, and you don't even know why your moods are being constantly jerked around and affected. You won't know why you're suddenly very happy, suddenly very sad, suddenly very fearful. You won't know that this is what's happening because you're choosing to be impacted by this device that you're carrying around your hand all day, receiving information. So now, one thing I want to ask, and perhaps we can ponder this, because this suggestion is constantly being made that you could get sick and die from something unseen. The suggestion has been planted, and your subconscious mind is receiving it all day long. How is that impacting your state of mind in terms of your inner peace? Are you walking around feeling afraid? Do you panic if someone coughs in your midst? Do you start to think that you're feeling symptoms if maybe you get a little sniffle or a sore throat? Does your mind start escalating with the thought of, uh-oh, did I catch something? Did I catch the virus? Because of the suggestion planted in your mind. And how often do you keep reinforcing that suggestion by listening to reports about sickness and death? Think about that. How much of your day is spent worrying about the state of your physical body to the point where you are feeling anxious and an undercurrent of anxiety all the time? Think about that. How is that affecting your mood and your belief that you are possibly getting sick? You know what, I've told a number of my friends who have battled chronic illnesses, if they could understand the emotional origins of the illness, they can heal their body. And sometimes they get angry. Are you trying to blame me for my sickness? No, it's not blame. It's understanding the power of the mind. Because if you have a specific challenge going on in your mind, a specific source of anxiety, and the vibrations of that thought are being sent to a part of your body, the part of your body that is receiving that negative vibration will begin to malfunction. And that is the source of your illness. So if we understand the power of the mind, then we can deliberately direct our thoughts. We can deliberately create healing. We can deliberately maintain physical well-being. And we can deliberately maintain an upbeat, joyful inner state. It's all, as you've said, starting with the mind. So you asked the question first thing in the show, how are people feeling? It's important to assess, what are you feeling? And what is the source of that feeling? If it's not a positive, joyful feeling, what is it in your mind that's triggering that mood, that feeling? And it could be an argument you had with a loved one. It could be something that you forgot to do, you feel guilty about. It could be something that you saw or heard that made you feel fearful or angry. But whatever it is, it's affecting how you feel. You have to think about what residual impact is something that may have happened yesterday still carried on to today, because we just woke up this morning. So whatever you're feeling, it's something either from yesterday or something that might have been replayed in your subconscious mind during the dream state at night. I had a dream a few months ago that kind of disturbed me about someone that I knew. And I was angry for the next 2 days. And I didn't realize that that dream affected my mood. And then I even caught a cold after that. And I very rarely catch anything. It only happens when my vibration is low, because I'm in a less than positive mood. And so I knew that that particular dream that was triggered by a conversation and an experience with that person, I woke up with that in my subconscious mind. It affected my entire mood, which ultimately affected my health because it lowered my vibration. And lower vibrations is where sickness begins. And I had a cold, which lasted maybe 2 days, and finally it dissipated. But if you can examine the source of a feeling that you're having that is not a positive, high vibration feeling, if it's not joy, if it's not a happiness that you feel, try to trace the root of that feeling so that you can undo whatever was planted in your subconscious mind, because that's where it all begins.
Absolutely. You know, the subconscious mind is linked to the spirit of the individual. So you said some very key pointers, Naima, when you said when I listened and when it entered. You know, like entering is like when it comes to your sensory organs, even when we are asleep, our sensory organs are forever, activated. They don't turn off, you know. So whatever we're experiencing, whatever we hear, because even in the dream state, you're either going to be the participant or you're going to be the observer. You know, it's very seldom that you are both, you know. I mean, usually you're either doing one or the other. And so when that happens, if the mind is still, the subconscious mind, which is the autopilot, is still activated, and it makes its own decisions, not based upon what you want. Like, you know, it's not, I think that sometimes what happens is we take the dream state as something very minimal, but really and truly it is something that has been experienced in some other state that has to actually be acted out. And believe it or not, you acted out because you made some conscious decisions.
Yeah.
When you woke up after, you know, sensing, because that's what feelings are, energy and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
When you have an emotion attached to it, you have a sensory organ of sensing. So you sensed that this was uneasy. That's the word you used.
Mm-hmm.
You were uneasy with that, which made you uncomfortable. The only way you would know it's uncomfortable, you have to sense discomfort. So when you sense discomfort, then you initialize something. You made a decision with your conscious mind, not the subconscious, because the subconscious is not going to make a decision. It's either going to observe or it's going to participate, but it's not going to make a decision. You say, well, isn't that a decision? No, it's just what it is. Observation is to do nothing, and participate is the same thing. That means you are involved, but you're
right.
Not making any particular choice or decisions with those. So, but consciously, you can say, I am going to do it, or I am not going to do it.
Right.
There's no gray shaded area. A lot of people think that they have these gray shaded areas of indecision. Indecision is just saying that you haven't made the choice yet.
Right.
No, you thought, oh, I don't know what to do. Okay, that means you did not make a choice. And most people know what to do, they're just afraid to do it because of that thing called fear. Fear affects the human mind, my goodness, in tremendous ways.
Yeah.
Fear does not exist on the outside, but only on the inside.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist outside. You know, like you said, wait a minute, if I'm walking down a pathway in the woods, I see a scary bear, okay, isn't that enough to make me afraid? Not necessarily.
Mm.
If you think that bear is an imminent threat, then yes, you will be afraid.
Yes.
Yes. Because then you make that decision immediately within a 45-second rule.
Yes.
That thing is an imminent threat to you. And then you're going to automatically go into adrenaline mode because the brain only picks up from sensory. It doesn't do any other way. If you sense it from the eyes, the ears, touch, taste, whatever it is, the sensory organ, then puts you in adrenaline mode. And let me give you a little more advice on that. Guess what? Nothing can be happening at all, and you can go into adrenaline mode. That's what we call anxiety. Anxiety is based upon the subconscious mind acting, you know, in a position that is always in a threatened area. And it gets so comfortable with acting, with performing this act until it actually does it at inopportune times, which means when nothing is happening, the heart starts to race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start feeling over anxious. You know, some people have sweaty palms. Some people have shortness of breath. I mean, it just goes into exactly like you're experiencing the greatest fear. But nothing is happening. So what's going on in the human mind then?
Mm-hmm.
You know? What's causing that? Oh, Psychological Association of Psychiatrists will say, oh, it is because there's an imbalance in the hormones, which is causing the serotonin and dopamine and you know, all of these other, you know, parts of the human brain to be in a position of fight, or fear components actively. Okay, and it happens over and over and over again until that person has a diagnosis of generalized anxiety. Okay?
Yeah.
So how can one prevent something from happening? Well, I believe, okay, some psychiatrist or some expert may question me on this, and that's okay, because Dr. Dell knows that. But I know this because of the patients that I work with. I've been giving them this technique to do, and it actually works, okay? When within 45 seconds if you are having a thought pattern such as self-defeat, self-sabotage, or self-destruction, which is anything that doesn't make you feel good, okay?
Right.
Anything. It doesn't matter what it is, because those are the only things that will cause those things. Negative energy, right?
Yes.
Negative energy excessive. Okay, we have to have some balance in negative energy, okay, because we cannot remove it completely. But we have to know how to balance, bring yourself back to what they call homeostasis mode,
yes,
mentally and emotionally. So that being said, if you ever have a thought that looks like it's turning into a worry or an obsession, you know, where you can't seem to get it out of your mind, then it starts to ruminate. Ruminate is different from obsessing. Obsessing is when you're thinking about it, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Then it comes back again, and then it goes away. Ruminating is when you can't get it out of your head.
Ah.
It's constantly like a played CD that doesn't have a stop button to it.
It just keeps rewinding.
It keeps rewinding, correct?
Yeah.
But one way that you can interrupt it within 45 seconds of that thought, because the mind can only concentrate on one thing at a time. You may have a variety of thoughts that's flowing through your mind, but believe me, you're going to gravitate to one of them. And whatever one you're feeling intensity about, the most intensity, will gain your undivided attention.
That's the one that dominates.
That's the one that dominates. Exactly. So 45 seconds, if there's a negative thought in your mind, a negative whatever that is, you have to replace it with two positive thoughts. Like, for example, if you have a thought, oh, I am not good enough, you have two positive thoughts that will say, yes, I am good enough, and I'm more than a conqueror.
Mm.
Okay?
But
you have to keep doing this on a regular basis, because the mind does not know about time and frequency, which means that if you don't do it often, consistently is the key with frequency, then it won't change. It's just like riding a bike. You have to create another pathway in the brain.
Mm.
So most people think that, why can I get this negative thought out of my head? Why does it keep playing? I said, well, are you doing anything to get it out your head?
You have to replace it.
You have to replace it with positive energy, affirmations, declarations. And when you do it on a regular basis, you're going to find out that the brain will then start slowing down. Because remember, you're on autopilot. Autopilot is whatever you train yourself, however you train yourself to respond and react. So in order to change one response and reaction, you have to then do it consciously.
Yeah.
If you wait for the brain to do it, I'm so sorry, the brain is just dumb, y'all. It just doesn't know.
It's hurting.
You think you got a dumb brain. Well, the thing about it is, it's waiting for you. It's just like a computer, a laptop, desktop. You know, it's no good to you if you don't put anything, if you don't turn it on.
Yeah, you got to turn it on. Got to type something on it. You got to program it. You got to give
it
a command
of what
to do.
Yeah. Look at on the desktop when you hit the part of power. What it says? Sleep, hibernate, log on, power off. Log off.
Turn it on.
It is the same thing. Your brain is the same thing. Mm. It is the same thing, okay? Hibernate, that means guess what it's doing? Nothing. Idling. That's another word for idle brain.
Ooh.
Hibernating.
And if you keep your mind idle, if you don't put something in it, then whatever else is put in it, there's an open, it's like someone else typing on a blank sheet of paper on your mind. Those are the words that stick, because there's nothing, you didn't type anything else on there, so that's the message that is being recorded because you didn't replace it with something else. So you got to erase what you didn't want and replace it with the thought that you want. And that takes some practice, because just think, if you've had a lifetime of thoughts that have been typed onto this blank sheet of paper of your mind, and if they're not positive thoughts, if they have been things like, oh, you're never going to be anything. Oh, you're so stupid. If you've had those things said to you by people close to you, people who raised you, people who your peers, your friends, your siblings, your parents, You got a lot of things you got to erase and replace with another thought, because those thoughts are the ones that just keep replaying and replaying and replaying. And unless you're consciously replacing those thoughts, then those are the thoughts that just get stuck. Like a, you ever played a record where it skips and it goes back and, you know, keeps replaying that same thing? That's what those thoughts are. Until you pick up that needle and place it on another spot on the record. I know I'm speaking a language that's foreign to people who weren't born in, you know, before 1970. I know, because we're talking about a whole different keyboard. Well, no, they do turntables sometimes.
Yes,
you know,
they do.
Yes,
yes.
Okay,
it's coming back, actually.
Yeah, it's coming back, so yes. But, yeah, that's how it is. You have to play another message. You have to consciously play another message.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And when we come back from our commercial break, I want to let you know, if you don't make a conscious decision, this is what's going to happen. So we're going to discuss that when we get back on our commercial break.
Be right back.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self, cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness sessions on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
And I am Dr. Debbie Green with our wonderful co-host, Naima Latif. We just broke up break. Oh, my goodness. Did I broke and break at the same time? When we came back from our commercial break there, I was actually getting ready to go into what happens when we don't choose to do anything. Naima said, if you have this thought that, you know, is constantly going on in your head, you got to choose to do something differently. Otherwise, guess what? The subconscious autopilot will kick in, all right? So if you had any type of trauma, any type of what they call unhealthy or distorted thought there that's already been trained, it's going to start going right then. It's going to start before you realize it. You are reacting and you're no longer responding. Response time takes thought. Reaction time is impulse. That's what it is. That's the difference. So whatever's been there, it's just going to keep going. And you say, well, if I got a healthy subconscious, then I shouldn't worry about it. I just let the subconscious do everything for me. Oh, excellent. But you have to train the subconscious to be that way and program it that way. Otherwise, it will not do it. So if you ever experience trauma, again, abuse, crisis, any type of cognitive distortion, I call it over-exaggerating, blowing things out of proportion, black and white thinking, you know, it's so many different cognitive distortions that happens when a person experiences life. So if you're not healthy subconsciously, then that means you have to create new pathways so that your mind knows what you want it to do.
I have a situation that happens frequently, and people are not aware that this is triggered by their subconscious programming of fear of other people or belief that other people intend you harm. Two situations. One, of course, is if you have had a thought in your mind, say about a particular ethnic group, and you believe that group is hostile toward you. And with this thought, you have an encounter with someone of that ethnic group. First of all, your expectation, because of what's been implanted in your subconscious mind, is that there's going to be a hostile encounter. And that person may not have any kind of thoughts about you at all, but everything they say, you're interpreting it as an insult of some kind. If they smile at you and speak pleasantly, you're thinking they're being sarcastic. If they don't smile at you, you're thinking they're being unfriendly. If they say nothing to you, you think they're snubbing you and ignoring you. But no matter what they do, but because of what is in your subconscious mind, you're going to interpret it as negative. So
right.
If at the end of your day you have all of these memories of people who treated you mean or people who were rude or people who snubbed you or people who made you feel bad, if you have this thought in your mind, at the end of the day you're feeling like everybody that you encountered was unfriendly, you have to trace that thought and perhaps recognize that none of that really existed. It was all in your mind because of your beliefs about these people. Most people aren't paying anybody any attention but themselves. Most people are self-absorbed in their own problems, their own situations, their own lives. They don't care about you. But if you have in your mind digested the idea that certain people are going to dislike you, you're going to believe that this is what you're experiencing, even if you are not. So the reality in your mind is the reality that you have created, even though it's not, in fact, the reality. We see that and experience that so often, which is why there's constant conflict. The belief that someone intends you harm, and then often you'll react toward them as if they intended to insult you or as if they disrespected you, and none of that might be true. Most encounters where people are in conflict is generated by something that is in someone's mind that is incorrect, but they're responding not to what that person did, but because how they interpret it based upon what's in their own mind. Because you can have that same encounter with all those same people, but in your mind, you believe that people are inherently good and they are friendly and they are likable and they like you. If you believe that, then no matter what they do, you're going to interpret it in a positive. Someone smiles, you take it as a genuine smile. Someone's mm-hmm. not smiling, you just figure where they're just, you know, serious because they have some serious thoughts in mind, but you don't take it personally. And if they're rude, then you realize they're having a bad day, and you might even say something to cheer them up. Oh, well, you know, things will get better. But you don't think, oh, they're nasty to me because they didn't like me. So everything has to do with your perception, and your reality all exists in your own mind. Once you realize that, then you can decide how you want to interpret it every encounter that you have. You can put the meaning to it, and you can choose to have a positive meaning to it, and therefore you can choose to have a wonderful day no matter what happens. But this, as you said, it takes practice. You mm-hmm. have to consciously do this, consciously create your reality.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because your view, you know, these are our receptors. You know, our eyes are our receptors. And whatever view you have, you're either going to be pessimistic or you're going to be optimistic. So if you're optimistic, your view is from a lighter point of view, as I call it. I give it a weight because people need to know that if you're thinking heavy is the pessimistic point of view. Mm. Thinking lighter is the optimistic point of view. So when you're thinking lighter, then you put yourself in a very harmonious state. People like me, okay, I'm optimistic. I don't wake up happy. I wake up content.
Ah.
I wake up in peace. Okay. That's why I wake up, you know. I allow myself to feel and orientate in my own being. Mm. You know, I check my mind, I check my heart, I check my spirit to see if they are harmonious.
Mm.
And if they're not, I put them where they need to be, you know. And, you know, and I practice. This is something I practice for a very, very long time. And when one does that, and I call it self-orientation. When you self-orientate, then a lot of these excessive feelings of negative energy that you don't need usually dissipates because, again, one should not feel like a victim. Anytime you feel like a victim in life, you will always think something is happening to you.
Mm.
We call it victim mentality. And this is where the battlefield then becomes intense, you know, because how can one master oneself if you always think you're a victim?
Yeah.
You can't. That means something is constantly happening to you.
Yeah.
Constantly. And even when nothing's happening to you.
You're picking on me. Yeah.
You know? When nothing is happening, you think something's happening.
Mm.
When someone looks at you a certain way, you assume they're doing something. When someone says something in a certain tone, pitch, or value, you assume. You hear what I said? Assume. So which means you're not operating in total truth. Okay? And it's easy. Fear will make you believe a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And you will start living falsehood, unaware that you are consciously doing this without your permission, believe it or not, because if you knew, if you really knew, you wouldn't do it. This is what brings on grief. This is what brings on anxiety. It brings on depression when it's done over and over and over and over again. So now you're training your mind. You're literally training your mind to be miserable.
Mm.
Isn't that something?
You're training your mind to be miserable.
And well,
you know,
what else can it do?
That's what it is. Your mind is constantly being trained one way or the other. Either you're training your mind for joy or you're training your mind to be miserable. Carolyn says, perception is the key word. That mm-hmm. is true. Now, I've had people say to me, oh, you're not living in reality. You know, what happens when somebody really is trying to harm you and you got this pie in the sky attitude and, you know, you're not paying attention and somebody who's talking to you, they really intend to come and snatch your purse, but you're thinking, oh, they're just being friendly and you're smiling at them and then they snatch your purse. Then what about that? And, you know, there is always, and for some people this might be a stretch, but understand that we always give and receive vibration.
Yes.
There's the sixth sense that all of us have. You can feel if someone means you harm, but you block that sixth sense when you are influenced by negative programming of your own creation. Fear, which was it false evidence appearing real? When you have programmed your mind to fear everything, then you can't benefit from the natural sixth sense that actually does warn you when there is danger, because you're always thinking everything is dangerous, and it isn't.
Right.
So yes, you have to clear that negative programming out of your mind so that you can, in fact, live according to a real sixth sense of vibration. You can feel the vibrations that people emit. You can feel when there is danger, and your instinct will guide you to step away from that which could be harmful. If everything you see, you believe is harmful because you have programmed yourself to live in fear, then you're going to believe something is going to harm you when it isn't. And it's like blinding your spiritual eyes.
Yes.
Because you are then seeing everything as possible danger, as opposed to being able to use those spiritual eyes to sense the vibration that every being is emitting. Because we are energy, all of us.
Yes.
And so you can feel the energy from a person. And when you're emitting positive energy, then, of course, you're going to receive positive energy back from those who have positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're constantly believing negative about everything, then you're emitting the negative energy that you're actually receiving back from them. Because everything mirrors to us our own condition.
Correct.
This is a reflective universe. You're always going to receive back what you're giving. So if you walk up to somebody with a frown and speak to them in an unfriendly tone, if they give it back to you, it isn't them being unfriendly. They're mirroring to you what you just gave them. So imagine if you come up to somebody with a smile. Well, of course they're going to mirror back to you that smile.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple thing, but it can only happen if you make a conscious choice to emit the positive frequency, the positive vibration, the positive energy, so that the positive can keep coming back to you, which
mm-hmm.
means your mind has to choose to program itself for positive expectations, positive encounters from people. Expect the positive. Don't expect people to be negative. Don't expect situations to be negative. Don't expect hurt. Because our expectations become our projections, and then they become our perceptions.
Exactly.
We create our reality every moment of our lives. We are creating the reality we experience.
Exactly. Again, you know, I have like two rules in my life, and it's the three H's and the three and it's the three H's and the four P's. The three H's is happiness, harmony, and hope.
Happiness, harmony, and hope. Yeah, I like that.
Happiness, harmony, and hope, and it has to have those, you know, those components. And the four P's is persistence, perseverance, patience, and prayer. That's the four P's. So, and I mean, these components, you have to make rules for your life. You know, society has already made rules. They already have regulations. They have laws, all of these things. But what do you have for your life? Have you made some rules and regulations for you? Have you set boundaries? Have you set limits in certain areas that help you stay healthy mentally and emotionally? Because those are areas that, that's the most important areas. Don't you know you can live life and you can allow yourself to be exposed to everything outside of yourself without limits, and your mind will slowly but surely deteriorate?
Mm.
Because it's not designed to deal with the worldly issues. It's not designed to deal with, I mean, to listen, to observe, to make a choice. To listen, observe, make a choice.
Yeah.
That's what, that's all it's designed to do. It's not designed to go and when you listen, you get stuck in it, you get entangled mentally, emotionally, and then you try to find your way back to your homeostasis, and you want to know, how did you lose control, you know? And believe me, there's no breadcrumbs leading you back to the house, okay? No, you put yourself too much out there. And when I say out there, people, I'm talking about dealing with people, places, and things. People, places, and things. Don't you know you can get too close to a person's life pattern and collide?
Mm.
You can collide. When I say life pattern, I mean sometimes we get too close to people. We call it codependency.
Mm.
When we get too close to people, what do you think your mind is doing? It's adapting to the other human being's lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because you're too close. It doesn't realize that you are that close. It doesn't, before you realize you live in their life. And if they're miserable, guess what you're going to be? Miserable.
Mm. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who it is. You know, you have to have boundaries. You have to have limits. You have to have, and these are the rules of life. If it's not productive, if it's not joyful, if it's not useful, you know,
mm.
or brings you joy, then it's an issue.
Yeah.
It's an issue.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, what they do, they continue to think that, I'm supposed to, it's my responsibility. Where is it written down that you have to be unhappy to make somebody else's happy? Where is that written down?
Yeah,
no, it's not.
Suffer. Absolutely.
And it's not selfish to take care of yourself. It's called selfness.
Yeah.
Selfness. Selfness says you have to make a conscious decision every moment of the day to do what's best for you. Everyone may have to adjust to it because they may not used to, especially if you change. And then you saying yes, 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 yes. And one day you just say, no, I can't. Of course they're going to change because you have conditioned them with your actions, with your behavior, that they can do whatever they want to do with you.
Yeah.
You, people only treat you the way you treat them and allow them to. That's
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So that's selfness.
Yeah.
It will save you so much time.
You know, I've heard a saying, you know who you are by the company you keep.
Yes.
And if the people around you are people who complain a lot or always got a lot of negative drama going on in their lives or always distressed, you have to look at yourself and say, why am I choosing to keep associating with this person who is always down, and they're absorbing and really draining me of my energy. So after I talk to them, I'm down. You have to ask yourself, why are you choosing to do that? Because, as you said, it's not our responsibility to try to lift up people who are choosing to constantly be negative, constantly be miserable, constantly have problems. It's one thing to be a listening ear for a friend. It's another thing if you find that you're always absorbing other people's negative energy.
Yeah.
It's only so much you can do of that before it begins to affect you.
Absolutely. Carolyn Hunter says, and even if you don't, give, even if you don't get it back, which you should not allow people to make you a seesaw ride up and down.
Mm.
Just shake it off and keep being positive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and it is, I think, again, we live in this society, Naima, as this happened when we were children, we were always told what to do, okay?
Yeah.
How to live, eat your food, make your bed, make good grades, you know, take the trash out, whatever the case may be. When we went to school, we were told the same thing. Make good grades, sit down, pay attention, listen, don't talk, speak. And so, you know, we were actually, believe it or not, trained to be codependent.
Yes.
And so people are still thinking with that same mind of codependency. I call it the childhood mind.
Mm.
So as they get older, they're still thinking, okay, somebody needs to tell me what to do. I don't know how to make my choices. I'm unsure of myself. I lack the confidence. I don't know how. I've heard so many people in my profession, my patients tell me, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I have no idea. You know, and it's something so simple. It's to just make a choice. But again, you know, if one receives grew up in a household that always says, oh, you're not good enough, you're bad, you're rude, you're constantly put down with negative words, then that literally transforms the ego. It makes the subconscious brain, because the subconscious brain is listening, and it keeps thinking the same thing over and over again. Oh, you're not good enough. Oh, I don't love you. Oh, you're not worthy. You know?
Mm.
And you grow up. You literally grow up in life with this particular mindset. So anytime there's a mistake, anytime you fail something, anytime something don't go right, you go right back into that mind state, because that is what the subconscious, that's what it is. It recorded those things. Now, the thing about it, even though that person said that, even though you experienced it, that's not who you are. You are not damaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
You are not damaged goods. You have to know that you can self-master your executive functioning. So that's what we're talking about. Temple to temple, flow. Your executive functions are so important with you. That's where your logic, your rationale, and your reasoning are. You have to use those areas of the brain to cipher life.
Mm.
It's like a sifter with flour. You know, you put it in there, you sift it until it becomes smooth. You have to cipher life. You have to know what's good for you and what's not good for you, and be willing and able with courage to say, that's not good for me. Whether it's people, that's not good for me. Whether it's situations, bad habits, that's not good for me. I need to change this. That's not good for me. And when you take your time and you do a self-evaluation and you do a self-inventory and you compartmentalize, you're going to realize something. All of the stuff that you got rid of, which I call house cleaning of the brain,
mm-hmm.
house cleaning of the mind, you know what I'm saying, that was stored and hoarded up in there that needs to be removed, you have a clear pathway. Create. Self-creation is the greatest gift that life can offer, because you can recreate what you want, but you have to give yourself permission. I call it living life unapologetically.
You know, and you speak of giving oneself permission. When we come back from the break, I want to explore and perhaps ask about the process of training your mind to think differently when you have perhaps been raised in an environment where the collective thought was that you or your kind of people, whether it's your gender, your skin color, your body shape, whatever it is that you identify with when you grew up in an environment where the collective thought has been that there's something defective about you. And so you have internalized that. And now as an adult, you're trying to undo that lifetime of programming. What is the process when there is nothing external that you can turn to help change that perception. All of it has to come from within you, and everything that's been put in you has been negative. How do you reprogram the mind? We got to take this break, but when we come back, I want to explore that and perhaps give people some tools to work with that may find themselves facing that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com. where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Where the collective thought has been, meaning the prevailing belief has been that you, whatever your thing is that designates you, whether it's your body shape, maybe in your society, everybody who is large is looked down upon, or your height, maybe everybody who is short is looked down upon, or maybe your skin color, maybe everybody who's dark skin is looked down upon, or maybe your gender, maybe everybody who's female is looked down upon. Whatever the thing is, everybody in that society seems to agree that there is something defective about you because of who you are or what you look like. And that has been ingrained in your subconscious mind so that you have spent a lifetime feeling defective and inadequate. Now, of course, the body that we're wearing is just a vehicle to do what we are doing here on earth. It doesn't make you greater or lesser than anyone else. So that thought is erroneous. But if the collective conscious mind of the people in your environment, your community, your culture has made those physical attributes a sign of defectiveness, how do you undo that belief in your own mind so that you can stop seeing yourself as unworthy or defective or lesser than? Because as long as you believe that about yourself, you will underperform and you will underachieve based on your belief of being lesser than, which you received from your society. This is a challenge that many people have everywhere where there is some type of discriminatory behavior based on whatever their physical characteristic is. And they have to come to the realization that we are all expressions of divine creation and all of us are perfect just as we are. But how do you undo the subconscious programming when the belief has been that there's something defective about you based on your physical expression?
Well, one thing about culture is one of the greatest influences in society today, because remember, it came from generational things. So when one experiences these things that you're talking about, they have to then actually make either one of decisions, which is going to be, am I going to continue to be like my mother, my father, in the culture that I grew up in, or am I going to be something else? You can't be both. I mean, you could, but it will be difficult to be both. That means you will then be practicing two types of lives, and people do this. You know, in their culture, when they go back home, they practice different rituals, they do different things, and they tend to literally feel out of sorts because they're not comfortable, because they really don't want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, when they are among the individuals that practice what they do want to be like or their lifestyle, then that's when they're comfortable. And we can go and actually look at, you know, the sexual orientation, lifestyles of a person that's practicing homosexuality or, you know, lesbianism, to kind of name a few. When if they've never actually was let's just say, if their families didn't know, okay, that they were having a practicing a gay lifestyle, and they would have to pretend to be someone else with that family, all right? But then when they go back to wherever they're going or be around people that are like this, they don't have to pretend anymore. They can be whoever they want to be. So that's an example of how a person's mind, believe it or not, has to change. Because, see, the mind is like a chameleon. It can actually adapt to many, many different things. However, this is the thing. If that thing is not something that is healthy for you, you know, it will, if it adapts to something that's unhealthy, then it's going to lead to self-destruction, self-sabotage, you know, and self-defeat, because one is not designed to practice unhealthy measures for a period of time without actually deteriorating. It's just like if you're eating food that's not good for your body, you know, if you keep eating it, it's going to cause health problems, the body to be sick. It's the same. It's the same thing. Whatever you put in your mind, if it's whatever you allow, whatever your thoughts are, whatever your habits are, and for example, a person that has an addiction. Addictions are based upon habits. And there's also can be some type of transfer from the geology of that as well. Like a father that has alcoholism, there's a possibility, a very strong possibility, that his children can be alcoholics as well if they don't choose to do something different. That's
right.
What I'm saying.
You have to choose.
You have to choose. See, choice is everything. Don't you know we make 50,000 choices per day? Over 50,000 choices per day. When you wake up, as soon as you wake up, open your eyes, that's a choice. You can choose to keep them closed if you want to. When you move, you choice. When you turn over, the repositioning the bed is a choice.
Yes.
Well, you're in your subconscious mind, you're making choices, whether you realize it or not.
Absolutely.
So that's what life is.
Yes. Well, we've got a caller. Before I take 863, something popped in my mind when you were speaking about people who are perhaps homosexual, but they're living in a community that doesn't accept it, so they have to pretend to be heterosexual in the midst of their family or friends or whatever the case may be. And I've known of people who will marry someone because that's what's accepted, and that marriage doesn't last because that's not really who they are. And it can be very devastating to the person who they have married, because they can't be that spouse to them because that's not their orientation. Their orientation is same sex. And it's challenging if you are in an environment where you have to fear the rejection of people, because that's where it comes from, fear of rejection. That's what makes you pretend to be that which you are not. But then, as you said, you go back to where you are accepted and you can be yourself. So our challenge as a society is to stop attacking people that we don't agree with, understand, or believe have a right to be as they are, whether it's a physical manifestation of appearance, whether it's a behavior that is personal. But it's the fear of non-acceptance that makes people alter themselves in a way that they believe will allow them to be accepted. That's like somebody getting a nose job. You know, maybe you were born with a wide nose, but maybe you live in an environment where most of the people's nose are thinner. So when you get the money, you get to a plastic surgeon and you thin out your nose. Why would you do that? Your nose is breathing. And if it wasn't malformed, your nose is breathing just fine. So, you know, why did you feel the need to change your nose? Because you believed you'd be accepted in a culture where a thin nose was more valued. We do all kinds of things trying to alter ourselves to fit what we believe will make us acceptable instead of us accepting ourselves as we are. And that's the challenge, learning to accept yourself, regardless of anybody else's opinion, to be who you are at all times and accept yourself and love yourself so that nobody else's opinion can change your opinion about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, let's take this caller at 863-816 Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us. Give us where you're calling from. And
Grand Rising, L.A., Central Florida.
Yes.
The way I tackled that, accepting myself, and I had to do it, I guess, not early, but semi-early. I guess around sixth grade or something like that. Well, definitely by ninth grade. But by 14. Because by the time I was 14, I was, and still am, 6 foot eight.
That's
taller than 99% of the population globally. So you get poked at, made fun of, housed, the air up there, all that other stuff. But I ran across something I read said, "What others think of me is none of my business." Mm-hmm. Once I embraced that, I was good.
That's
how I did it.
And think of how many tall people that we know that slump over. It's same thing. I have to make myself shorter because shortness is more valued in my culture. I mean, I went through a period of that where I had to learn to love and accept my height because there was a period when I believed there was something defective about being as tall as I was, and I towered over everybody, so I can definitely relate to what LA is talking about. So when you are living in an environment where the collective attitude is that you are defective, you are incorrect, you are imperfect, you are not acceptable as you are, if you digest and believe that thought, then you will figure out ways to alter yourself to fit into whatever is acceptable. And that is a sign of lacking of self-love. You have to love yourself as you are.
Yes. I'd like to ask the caller a question. So how tall are you now if you were 6'8"?
Same height. I stopped growing about 14.
You're 6'8", right?
I stopped at about 14. I'm still 6'8". The only difference is I was a lot, I don't weigh that much now, but I probably weighed less then. So I embraced it. And I looked at, as I got older, considerably older, I looked at the creator, whoever you call a creator. They design our bodies and they put us in the body that equips us with what we need to do while we're on this planet. That's the way I look at it. So, it's a temple and everything. But, yeah, 14, I've been just like the same since.
And how many times were you asked, did you play basketball?
God, countless. And I ended up playing basketball. I started in the seventh grade. I was offered my first basketball scholarship in eighth grade.
And
I went to college on a basketball scholarship. I liked basketball but didn't love basketball. My thing, particularly when I got to college, was mass communications. That was my major. So, and that was like home for me, the radio people, journalism people, all that type thing. So, but the basketball scholarship paid the bills for 4 years. I really didn't have a whole lot in common socially with basketball, ball players. I mean, I know I got some friends from back in the day, and, some, I can drop some names now that people would probably know. But, it just wasn't my I had other interests besides basketball, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
And my whole thing, even today when it comes to sports, I think that there are too many, particularly in the American culture and particularly in the black community, just my opinion, I think we're too focused in on the player or coaching aspect of sports. I think more black kids need to become interested in building. If you're going to be interested in sports, then building venues, building stadiums, building arenas, starting your own league. That aspect of sports, which is very, or sports manufacturing. I mean, the Chinese make more money in sports than name the highest paid players. somebody in China's making more money than, I mean, they dwarf them in money, but nobody talks about it.
Now, is that because they own some of the business aspects of sports, such as the stadiums or the concessions or the
well, I mean, I'm glad you brought up concessions. I mean, hell, anybody can pop popcorn. So, you know, why doesn't somebody come up and try to get the concession stands for all of, you know, the sports events in Chicago or D.C. or whatever? Or you can – sewing. You know, Nike makes a lot of the – they're in the sports merchandising. But how many people that live – let's say Chicago, how many 15- or 16-year-olds that if they don't know how to sew can learn how to sew and then put out the uniforms for every sports franchise in any particular city and make hundreds of millions of dollars? Nobody's
Absolutely.
Having that conversation.
Well, you know, that brings to mind the idea of programming. Again, if someone has been programmed to think that their particular type of people can't do that particular type of thing, like, you know, a lot of females that get told that they can't do math because that's a masculine thing. And I really love that movie. Was it Hidden Colors? Were those
females? Hidden Figures. Yeah.
Calculations
hidden
and got
figures.
Those astronauts up in the air. And pretty soon,
right.
astronauts saying, look, I ain't going up in that rocket until that black girl, that smart black girl, gets some figures. And, I mean, that was just like, wow.
I love that movie.
Yes, I love that movie because we get easily programmed to believe that we are limited because the society that we live in has determined that people who look like us, whatever that look may be, or whatever it may be in terms of a physical manifestation of gender or whatever it is, height, weight, color, gender, all these things, income,
yeah.
and things that don't have anything to do with who we are, we get programmed to believe that we are limited. And you have some societies, because the India and the whole untouchables culture was very difficult to break until someone came along like Mahatma Gandhi to just do away with the idea that you are born into a caste system and this is all you can be and this is by divine design. This is your limitation. That thought had to be broken because
mm-hmm.
until then people accepted it. Oh, well, I'm the lower caste. I clean the toilets. That's my life. You know, it only becomes reality if you accept it in your subconscious mind. If you accept the idea that you are limited, that becomes the reality that you create. What is that saying that Carthy Winston says? And Miseducation of the Negro, you don't have to tell a person, when you program the person to believe they're inferior, you don't have to tell them to go around to the back door. They will go without being told. And if they go around the back door and find there isn't one,
they will build it themselves.
Yes. So that becomes...
That's how powerful the human mind is.
That's how powerful it is. So you basically live the life you believe based on what you believe about yourself. So that's the challenge that we have, is removing the barriers that have been instilled in the society in which we live. If we live in a society that has a belief system that says that some people are better than others based on, you know, arbitrary things that have nothing to do with anything, because all of us are the same. We're all embodied consciousness. And the consciousness that we have is the energy of the creative force of the universe we call God.
Absolutely.
That's all.
Absolutely. That's why one should be careful about building brick houses in the mind.
You
should be very careful.
In the mind.
Yeah, if you build a brick house, you better make sure it's benefiting you.
Yes.
Because it's hard to tear a brick house down. You have to use a lot of pressure. You have to do that's why and it's amazing that, you know, in a course of a lifetime, that's actually what people do. They build brick houses in the mind. They lay a foundation. That foundation will be laid, and before they realize it, every day they lay a brick. They lay a brick.
Yeah.
And they create all of this stuff. And, you know, they'll go back to what is code, that victim mentality. Oh, I am this way because my mother didn't love me. My father hated me. You know, I went through trauma. I was abused. I was, we'll go back to that. And if that's, we're not minimizing the pain, but we can't maximize it either.
Right. Don't define yourself by the pain you have been.
It's not what happens to you. It's what you think about yourself that happens to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, one can be the homeless person. We hear this all the time. You can be a homeless person, you know, and then, you know, lo and behold, a year later, you're a millionaire. Okay, so what happened? Oh, you know, and the thing about this is, you know, you said, well, that guy has got a, he got a, he got a break in life. You know what I'm saying? Here comes a person, so and so. But guess what? If he didn't allow himself to even think that he was worthy, then yes, he would have told me where I ever the million came. Like, oh, no, that's not for me. I don't deserve that.
You know,
I'll never do nothing. I'll fail it. You know, I don't know what to do with $1 million. Oh, no, I'm not going to take that. What do you want?
Yeah,
you want something from me from doing that? And people do this. This is reality. They don't even realize when peace comes knocking at the door to give them a gift because they've been miserable so long, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, that they can't even open themselves.
Yeah. There was an experiment. I'm sorry. Yeah. There was an experiment done a while back, and I'm trying to remember the group that did it, but they did an experiment on a group of homeless people, people who were impoverished and all of that, and they gave them a certain sum of money. I think it was something like $100,000. And within a year, I think nearly all of those people were right back in the same condition they had been of homelessness, of poverty. And, you know, the question was, what happened? They had the big break. They had the money. But it's the thought, the way you think about yourself is going to determine what you do with what you have, either because you're feeling unworthy, either because you have an addiction or you have something that you're doing that has created the condition you're in. It isn't that you don't get a break in life or people don't like you. It's what you are creating in your own mind about yourself that caused you to manifest the condition of being unworthy. And so even when you get a big gift like $100,000, what do? You spend it, you do whatever you did, but it was somehow gone. And they were all back in the same condition they had been in within a year. And I remember Oprah had said something. She had said she had tried to do a program where, you know, I'm going to lift people out of the ghetto, out of poverty, and give them money, and then they're going to suddenly change their lives. And it didn't work. They all ended up in the same situation, still struggling, still impoverished. And said, I learned from that you can't help people until they change what they believe about themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
it happens more so than often. Again, I go right back to that same thing. What kind of brick houses are you building in your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever your foundation is, wherever it is, if it's a foundation out of love, okay, you're going to gravitate love to yourself. And love is a mental thing. It's not all emotional. So self-love, self-discovery, self-understanding, self-discipline is needed. But you got to first do the most important thing is accept self-truth. If you don't understand the self-truth about yourself, and some people deny it, some people push it away, some people ignore it, some people make excuses for it, explanations, everything. But the thing about it is, if I know I am my own self, what they call destroyer, and I'm making up every excuse in the world, okay, that no, it's not me. It's not me. It's you. It's this. It's that. Then it'll never get repaired. It'll never get healed.
Got to take responsibility for what you've created. We
got
to take
responsibility every day. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, we got to take one last break. And of course, if you all want a visual image of our beautiful host, you can go to Soulful Solutions on Facebook. And, of course, if you want to call in and comment, call us at 515-605-9325 and press 1. And that lights up your number on our switchboard and lets us know you have something to say. So we've got a caller at 779-801. We're going to come to you right after the break. So sick and stay. Don't stray away. Be right back. Stay with us.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Perfect Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Do you or your organization need space for an event? Call the Quarry Event Center at 2423 East 75th Street in Chicago for your parties, banquets, award ceremonies, repasses, concerts, and business seminars, available 7 days a week, now under new management. Call us at the Quarry at 773-663-2557. That's 773-663-2557.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Cell Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Understanding and controlling the battlefield of the mind, self-mastery. So we're going to go ahead and take that caller, please.
All right. 773-801, your mic is open. Grand Rising. How are you today?
Oh, I guess you're talking to me. This is Maika, Grand Rising.
This is the illustrious Maika. Yeah.
Hello.
Good to hear your voice today.
I'm glad to... glad for the subject. Thank you so much because, you know, just story. It's a lot of things I want to comment on that are since I've been on at 8 o'clock. But my own struggle in terms of at a point in my life, I was introduced to the science of nonviolence. And I was in a group of people and we all agreed with nonviolence and we agreed that we were going to work to create a nonviolent social structure. And we lived in community, which meant we lived together. We were not relatives. We were all from different cities, and the person who brought us together told us once that in the late 70s that, you know, we didn't have anything to protest anymore because all our rights were legally protected by law, which made us free people. And as free people, the first thing a free people do is grow food for themselves. You know, they secure their most essential need. And so we all agreed to do that. And so we started learning agriculture. And from agriculture, we realized that true culture comes from agriculture. As you interact with the land, with nature, your culture evolves. And, of course, we realized and we talked about the fact that we didn't have a culture. We had come from a slave culture that had been passed down to us by our parents and the society. So then we realized, you know, as we continue to apply nonviolence to ourselves, that the foundation of any true culture has to be principles, that you have to build on principles, love, truth, peace, justice, kindness, happiness, abundance. So we started working on getting the slave culture out of us because it was a part of us. That's what we had been programmed to exist within. And we exhibited all the traits of that culture, the slave culture. So we didn't have any tools like, you know, the only tool we really had at that time was talk therapy. And we talked a lot. We met a lot and we examined a lot of things. But we didn't have tools like EFT or hypnosis or, you know, other energy therapies that can help transform the mind. So, you know, eventually we got to traits that we weren't able to deal with, like the sexual traits that people carry with them from the slave culture, like incest, which was bred on the plantation. No person on a small plantation could go to another plantation to secure a mate. So they ended up mating with their family members, and that became a part of their innate way of expressing their sexual reality. Well, we didn't know how to deal with those things, and we didn't even know, like myself, I didn't know nothing about that. That was never a part of my family makeup. And so those things started coming out, and it started destroying what we were building. Well, the thing that I always sought, the highest attribute that I wanted to follow as it relates to principles was peace of mind. I wanted to get to a point where no matter what is going on around me, I could have peace of mind and wouldn't be jerked here or jerked there. And so I kept continuing to work on that as our little communities began to dissipate and from internal chaos, from not being able to deal with the sexual realities that people are dealing with. And so that's when I ran into EFT. At a point, I ran into EFT in the early mid-90s, and then that became a lifesaver for me because coming out of the community, there was a lot of stress. We didn't know about stress at that time. We didn't know about a lot of things. There were things we just couldn't comprehend. And EFT helped me because I had become overly stressed and burned out as a result of dealing with, you know, first of all, you're dealing in community, you're working towards a goal, but then there's the pressure from the outside society, the rejection. Y'all crazy. Y'all need to get y'all some money. Well, we're growing some food. Okay, well, that's not enough. That's not going to make you no food. Farmers are poor. You know, all that kind of stuff. To the point that even today, I find that my children who grew up in these communities, they reject me to this day because I don't fit into the norm society. And so I was able to achieve peace of mind to the point that my children decided I can't even interact with my grandchildren because of the way I think and the way I tell them. Family has to be built on principles. And if you don't build family on principles, it's going to fall apart because the reality is coming out of slavery, the only thing slaves saw coming out of slavery was European families. And they started emulating these families, but they never understood the foundation. These were violent structures because these are the people who enslaved you. So you just imitated, emulated, and copied what you saw, but you never thought through what's needed for real so that your family structure can be solid. And it's something that you can pass on to your children that can sustain their lives. So that's kind of where I am today. Still, you know, and most of the people who I worked with during the many years that we worked to create nonviolent communities, they've since gone on. So it's been an uphill battle, but I think I have really obtained peace of mind right now because I don't let anything bother me. I'm untriggerable. I think I said it the last time I was on the show when Jody came in and said what she said, but that was before I achieved that. That was a couple of weeks before. But since then, I had got to the point, well, no, I'm not going to let people trigger me to do anything. I'm going to be who I am in the situation and be comfortable with that. So I just wanted to share that in terms of who I am and where I am. And I'm always looking for principled people to interact with, people who can be truthful, who agree to be truthful, who agree to be loving, who agree to be just, who agree to speak to disorder when they see it, that which means you got to be courageous to do that. And so many people lack that. It's ridiculous. So I wanted to share that, but I also wanted to say in terms of the remark about homelessness and that study, I've concluded in and of myself that the majority of the people in this society who are homeless were latchkey children. And that's the study that really needs to take place. Were they latchkey children? Did they grow up in the 70s when home was abandoned by the mothers where they went to work and thus they never got to understand the value of home and how to establish a home? And that's just my opinion on that. And in relationship to height, you know, I'm 5'10 and a half. So I went through the height thing too. And then as I began to become a teenager and we were having cotillions and stuff at the high school that I went to, I noticed all the girls had to put on high heels. They were trying to be tall, you know. So I was able to reflect on that. And then when I look at Miss America and Miss Universe, those women were 6'1", 6'2", and it was like, oh, my God, I'm just 5'10 and a half. I'm trying to figure out where I go to get a surgery to cut my legs down.
Yeah, it's all women go through things in a society where shortness is valued. But, you know, and
right.
I thank you so much, Maika, for the point you raised. She said something that kind of triggered a memory that I have because my sister and brother-in-law, they met and raised their children in a community that was a communal lifestyle. And for them, it was a religious community. And I say it, Jesus People USA, they still exist on the north side of Chicago. And it kind of evolved out of the hippie culture of the 60s where you had a lot of young people who had a spiritual awakening, but their lifestyle didn't fit them into the conventional church structure. So they sort of made a community, and they wanted to live according to the principles that they felt the disciples lived, where, you know, all live together, all share everything. So that was their initial thought. But the communal lifestyle, it was such a radical thing for the general society. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of their family members would criticize and say, all right, you all ain't got no money, and how you living like that, and you know, how are you sharing everything? So, but for them, it was a place of acceptance because they were interracial couples, and there were a lot of interracial couples in that community, whereas in the general society, that was still frowned upon, that was still attacked. So if you could raise your family in an environment where everybody who is rejected by the society and deemed defective by the society is therefore accepted and nurtured, then that's going to produce a level of emotional stability and mental health because you are in a place where you are valued. But you can step outside of that community and then get attacked. So in many instances, there was a desire to insulate everybody from the world and isolate them from the attacks of the society that said, you all are strange, you all are different, you all live in that weird lifestyle. So, you know, it was an interesting observation because you do need to be in an environment where you are nurtured, even if you are attacked in the outside environment, which is why I understand things like the gang mentality, where a lot of the children who may join a street organization where they are accepted and there's a feeling of protection and provision, even though you might be coming from a family that's dysfunctional and attacking you, you feel at home in that gang structure because that's the family that nurtures you. Everybody needs to be in a culture, in an environment where their worth is reinforced. When you're not, that's what makes it challenging to try to rediscover that sense of self-worth because it hasn't been reinforced in the people that raised you or around you or you're depending on for your survival. And I think that's an interesting point you raise about homeless people possibly coming from a destabilized household where there was no anchor, no support. You know, the parents are gone. You're raising yourself. So you really don't learn how to manage and maintain a home because the teaching wasn't there. The structure and foundation wasn't there. I think a lot of what we see in our society where people are struggling and failing in life comes from not being nurtured, not being in an environment where they were valued, not being made to feel accepted, and not being able to undo that negative subconscious programming that says you are unworthy, you are unacceptable. And if you can't find some way to undo that thought, then that becomes what you manifest, being unworthy, being unacceptable, and then you therefore you don't achieve because that's what you believe about yourself.
Absolutely. Again, one has to create. Self-creation is the most valuable thing that you could ever give yourself. It's not money, it's not jewels, houses, or cars, or assets, or even people. It's self-creation because life is just based upon adjustments. Everything we do, we have to adjust. So if you're not adjusting, you're not creating. So you're just adapting. And some things you're not supposed to adapt to, you know. And if we think that, you know, that if we are, just imagine this, if we adapted to every dysfunction that ever happened, then what we're telling our brain is that it's okay to keep that adaption. Mm. It's okay to keep that programming. And that programming doesn't stay the same. Please understand, when one accepts a distortion, it metatizes. It grows. Because mm-hmm. whatever you put in your body is going to multiply. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
Whatever thought you can put love in, it's going to multiply. You can put fear in, it's going to multiply. You know, whatever you put into being, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, soulfully, is going to multiply. That's why we have to be very careful what comes in and flows in, because we're pouring mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, pouring. Everything is flowing through this body. Everything is flowing through this being. So whatever is flowing through there, you have to, again, question, analyze what is good and what is bad. And sometimes we get that thing confused. Some people may say, I don't know what's good and what's bad for me anymore because everything has been falling apart in my life for so long, I don't know where to start and where to finish. Well, again, we have to go back to self-orientate. We have to go back to the basics. Self-monitoring, you know, inventory, which means look at oneself from the deepest parts. I know sometimes we don't want to look within. We do not. Some people don't even look themselves in the mirror when they wake up. They brush their teeth, they comb hair, but don't really look. I mean, really consciously look up to this wonderful person that's you. Yes, you know. We are imperfect. We are fault-finding. Yes, we are sometimes definitely prejudgmental, assumptions. All of this is created, and it makes you. So I always said, love your broken parts.
Love your broken parts.
When you love your broken parts, your beautiful parts will just get bigger.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, yes.
And it's okay. You're doing it for you. You don't have to have permission to love yourself.
Absolutely.
Live life unapologetically. You cannot live it for an allow yourself to breathe. Don't you know people who don't love themselves and they struggle with life don't really breathe? They shallow breathe. They shallow breathe. They only breathe enough for their hearts to beat. That is it, and for the functions of the body. But breath is only given to those who are less stressed, less occupied by the things of life, you know? And when bad things happen, it's all right. You know, you always hear that saying, you know, why does bad things happen to good people? Because you're stronger. And you can take it, whether you realize it or not. You have this thing called self-resilience in you, a part that never dies. You know, even if people, they experience suicide ideation, and they always say, well, I can't even die right. You know, every time I attempt, it seems like that fails.
That fails. I can't even do that right. Yeah, we got a couple of more callers here.
Absolutely. Bring them on.
Let me take area code 773-436. Grand Rising. Thank you for joining
us. Hallelujah. Greetings, Global Transformers. Grand Rising to you. This Saturday, I want everybody to tune in from noon to 2 p.m. To Wisdom with Mama D. Our topic is overcoming the slave catcher's mentality and Negrophobia. You know, one of our guests is Miss Carmen Rose. I'm sorry?
I was just saying, oh,
can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
You know, your subject reminds me of, I never found anyone to fulfill my needs. A lonely place to be. So I learned to depend on me. Learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. Remember that song?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I'm feeling that in my heart.
Yes.
And I was thinking about my belly. You know, there's a tummy when you're a little girl. Then there's a stomach when you're a woman. And then when you get to be a grandmother, there's this thing called belly. And one day I looked down and I saw this thing called belly, and it kind of jiggled around. I said, oh, what is that? You know? And so what I did was I joined a belly dance class. I said, you know what? It doesn't say a tummy class. It doesn't say a stomach class. It says this is belly dancing.
Oh, that's cute.
I said, let me get in there and learn how to wiggle that belly around. And boy, did it feel good. Ooh. I suggest if you haven't gone into a belly dancing class, get yourself enrolled.
All right, so now, Mama D, everybody who knows you now has a visual image of you belly dancing. You just created that in our minds.
Hey. As a matter of fact, look in that mirror and check out that belly and start loving on it, you know? Hug yourself,
right.
Love yourself. But the problem is when you don't get love from a significant person in your life, just because they're in your life. I was reading an article about the 1991 census, and it said that this was the first time that children would not be born, over half of Americans' children was not born into what they call traditional families, where there was a biological mother and father, and children came after the marriage. So they said that a lot of fathers wasn't in the home, and mothers were single moms, but they were working outside of the home. And they talked about how there was a weakening of the church influences and the community influences. And, you know, when you think about that latch key, where the children wasn't going home to grandmothers that had a nice glass of milk and some chocolate cake that she always put aside for her little grand, you know. I always got that little piece of cake or something, little piece of pie, little piece of cake or something. And she wasn't in that home, that the extended family. So grandma or I guess grandpa's too sometimes would come in and the children would be on the milk and cookies or milk and cake, and they were telling grandma all about what happened in their day. And it was wonderful, but then they came in with these commercialized ideas, and they put grandparents in nursing homes. You know, you had to have your own apartment in the senior citizen buildings and all this kind of stuff. So now the children are coming home with a latchkey. They're coming home with nothing. And I, in conclusion, I heard a young man this morning. He was on the radio, and he was saying, these old people, they don't like children. And I was wondering to myself, what old person hurt him? What old person didn't give him the love that he needed, that he has formed a conclusion that old people just hate young people?
Wow. Well, you're right, Mama D. That happened somewhere in his life. It did. And like you say, it's that separation that we created by putting our elders in separate homes instead of being part of our extended families and helping with those children, helping give the love and nurturing to those children. We got another call, Mama D. I'm going to squeeze in real quick. Mama AZ, thank you so much for joining us. Give us your thoughts. We got about a minute before we got to wrap up. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Grand Rising family. Thank you for sharing that, Mama D. That's the best, one of the best exercises that a body could partake of besides swimming. So thank you for that belly dancing episode in your life, because at 22, 23, 24, I did belly dancing and did shows and things on that nature, and it was good for the body. It was a good tidy for the body. So thank you. That gave me a chuckle that I needed this new day. Thank you, Mama D. Thank you, Dr. Lucy. Thank you, Dr. Green. Thank us all.
Thank you, Mama AC, for that visual image of you belly dancing as well. All right. We are on the station. Yes. Good for the soul. And, if we didn't get to you today, we got to wrap up now. Be sure to call in tomorrow. We will be right back here with Health and Well-Being with Viata. And so we look forward.
Hey, good morning.
And learning more about our well-being.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show.
Yes. Make sure the brick houses of the mind that you don't want to stay there. Okay? Because guess what? It's a permanent thing. One should always be conscious of your thought. Make every choice count. Every choice count. For the benefit of you. Love yourself, silly. Guess what? Guess ain't nobody they don't know what you need. Give yourself what you need mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, so that you will be well pleased. So after this is over, after this life is done, you can say rest well and rest easy. That's the most important thing.
There you go. Peace
Thank
mind.
You, everyone that joined us. I love this topic because I see that I'm going to stab into it a little more. Yeah. So we're going to be back next Thursday, 8 a.m., 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 a.m., 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Again, thank you so much, my wonderful calls. You are such a blessing to be around. I appreciate you.
So much fun. Thank you so much.
Anyway, if you have any concerns or need any extra information, my email address is soulfulsolutions, with an S, 77, at gmail.com. With an S, 77, at gmail.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
Nigeria. Eshe. South Africa. Ngiyabonga. Senegal. Jerez. Kenya. Asante. Israel. Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.